Not since at least 1968 has this country been so divided. It feels like it's at a boiling point that is distressing as we look forward to the next election and we think about just how divisive it could be. Can local news play a role in shoring up our democracy?
Welcome to Cambridge Forums. Can local news fix the crisis in democracy? I'm Mary Stack, and today we're beginning another mini-series which will examine the pivotal role of information and facts and the function they play in a healthy democracy. There are plenty of good reasons for Americans to feel that the country is actually coming apart at the seams, not least because our disinformation industries are doing such a good job at fueling the division and the polarization. It's a propagandist dream. I'm delighted to hand over this discussion to Charlie Sennett. He's the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Ground Truth Project. Charlie is an award-winning correspondent, a best-selling author, an editor with 30 years of experience in national and international and local journalism. And joining him are three formidable media professionals: Carol Wood, who is the Business Innovation Director for the Colorado News Collaborative, which supports 180 media organizations in Colorado; Bobby Reznor, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and also the founding editor of the New Bedford Light; and Tracy Powell, who is the founder and CEO of the Pivot Fund. She's a leader in philanthropic efforts to increase racial equity and diversity in news media. So welcome, Charlie.
One of the questions I want to be sure we get at is kind of the question of the panel. How can local news play a role in pulling us back together as a country? I mean, I don't think, I mean, certainly in my lifetime, not since at least 1968, has this country been so divided. It feels like it's at a boiling point that is distressing as we look forward to the next election and we think about just how divisive it could be. So let's talk for a minute about sort of the optimism here, right? All of you are involved in new entities that are doing these really tremendous efforts to save local news operations, to reimagine them, to hear communities so that we really know what the issues are so we can serve them better. Can local news play a role in pulling us back together and hopefully shoring up our democracy, which feels stressed, and some would even say it feels like the foundation is cracked these days?
I don't know if we can fix it, but I think we can make a big, big difference. There's so many ways in which we at the New Bedford Light have been able to engage people who were never engaged before, and how we've been able to animate civic life in lots of different ways. Some of that is voting, but that's not really what it's about, because in our community, for example, the voter turnout is abysmal, and it just is, and it's going to take years and years and years for people to reconnect. And I think a strong, ferociously independent news outlet, which is something that we hammer. We are not ideological. We are not beholden to a political party or our donors or our board members or our funders or, you know, people who want us to publish their press releases, whatever it is. We are independent journalists. And, you know, that's like so fundamental to us here on this panel, but people don't even believe it. They don't even believe that we're nonpartisan at first, but I think they're starting to see it now because we're equal opportunity skeptics and we do critical thinking and investigating of all kinds of folks who have vested interests in the community. And we've made, I wouldn't say enemies, but, you know, we've made a lot of friends, but we've also got politicians running scared and because they know we're watching. And when people see that, they appreciate it. And that to me is the most heartening aspect of this whole endeavor in New Bedford, is all the people who've gotten involved. So we're very local, we're very community-based, we're funded by our donors, we're nonprofit, all digital and very, very big on social media and video and all the different ways that you need to connect with different kinds of people, including those who don't speak English. So we do a lot of Spanish language content. But, you know, we've been able to inject facts and research into roiling debates that tend to be very emotional and very fractured and very polarizing on, say, rent control. And, you know, we don't endorse candidates, but we come into a debate like that by looking at what have been the effects of rent control around the country and in other communities like ours to see what we can do here. Well, that takes time. It takes effort. It takes really deep reporting, really broad reporting. And when I see people go to a council meeting, circulating a petition for something or other that references our work, that just thrills me. That just thrills me. You know, that's what it's about. And they do. And we recently did a reader, a community survey, and about, you know, how the community feels about us and the work we're doing and getting their suggestions and stuff. But this is the most heartening thing I've seen in a very long time. Half the respondents said that they had taken some kind of action thanks to the New Bedford Light. They voted, they wrote a letter, they made a phone call, they went to a meeting, whatever it was. Maybe they went to a cultural event. But half of them said they had taken action. That is democracy.
That is beautiful. And that is one of the cleanest metrics for impact I've heard from, you know, we deal in this realm every day looking for how do you measure the impact of local news? And I think that's as good as any. Like, has this news organization provided you local information that was actionable for you to go to vote or to join a celebration of the culture within your community? Congratulations on that number. That is impressive. This is important. How do you see this bigger question that's really at the core of our gathering here, which is what role can local news play in trying to fix what feels like a very broken democracy?
So, very important question. The hyperlocal newsrooms that we work with tend to focus on really hyperlocal issues. The people in LaGrange, Georgia, for example, know that they can trust and count on BTV to deliver them news about what's happening in their local schools, can count on her to tell them what, you know, what's happening with local businesses and why water rates are going up or why their property insurance is going up because development is happening there too. She really focuses in on hyper-local issues. You know, she's the one that they call when they have questions about what's happening down at the jail with COVID and people are worried about relatives or family members that may be in the local jail. She's also the one that was called when a local official who was convicted on criminal charges turned themselves in to the local prison. April was there recording it live as it happened, and she was the only one there. So the way that we break through this hyperlocal polarization is by supporting, investing in these hyperlocal newsrooms that are embedded in their communities. They, you know, folks go to the grocery store, they know April, they see April, they can talk to April, they know they can count on her to tell them the truth. And there's a difference between, I know journalists, we are very consumed with facts, and rightfully so, but facts aren't always the truth. And so I think that sometimes we can get lost in that, right? You know, if you don't tell the whole story, then that's not the truthful story. Mm-hmm. So they turn to these folks that they know, their neighbors, right? Their neighbors, to count on them. They, you know, some of the research tells us people trust other people. They don't necessarily trust platforms. They trust other people, people they know. And that's what is at the core of how Pivot does its work and the kinds of news organizations that we invest in.
I love the title of your talk, People Power, at our conference this last weekend. It was really, I think it was spot on in terms of this challenge to democracy. Like, what role is local reporting going to play? And I think sort of wider aperture on it, How important is it that we think about changing how we tell the stories of these communities and change who is telling the stories to build more trust? And I've heard you really riff on this, Tracy, and I want to come back to that. So think about that, and we're going to circle back. Mm-hmm. Carol, I want to ask you a just slightly different, a pivot away a little bit from the democracy question right into the business model, because if we don't have sustainable operations for news organizations serving these local communities, then this problem is just going to continue to burgeon out of control, and we're just going to see it just continue to rage like a fire, right, and rip right through more communities. But one of the things that's most exciting in this space, I think, is the nonprofit journalism models. I think they are the ones where we're seeing the most excitement. We're seeing really interesting and very dynamic business models that have revenue in them, right? This is not just about putting your hand out for donations. It's thinking about sponsorships, thinking about events, thinking about a lot of different ways to create revenue that is community supported and that relies on people who are willing to fund the mission of the organization and not just the eyeballs on it for advertisers. But you're right on a really interesting edge of that new sense of innovation and the dialogue that's going on within the businesses in supporting a lot of for-profits, as well as those who are, I think, what we might call hybrids, right? Who are using nonprofit and for-profit. Give us a quick take on the insights you're seeing on the in the business community, the business side of this, and how that's going to help these local news organizations be sustainable.
Sure. One of the things that I love about news orgs in Colorado, and I know nationwide, is the willingness of publishers to experiment. And so we have public benefit corporations, we have nonprofits, we have for-profit models here. And each one of those has the same goal, and that is to listen to the community, which has been said here before. And I want to say, I was a reporter for years and years before getting involved in the business part of our industry. And I've stayed in the business side because I've come to understand how important it is for us to have a strong foundation so that we can continue to support that good journalism. We have to remember that disinformation is free. You can get that anywhere, all the time, on your phone. And so in order for us to have these wonderful sites like Bobby's and like other ones across the country that do not have a paywall, we have to have robust funding, whether that is through, you know, from organizations like Tracy's or other ones around the country that are supporting the nonprofits. And I have to say, we have a situation here in Colorado where the public benefit corporations and some for-profit models still are receiving grant funding. There are ways to do that. You can get a fiscal sponsor. And out here in the West, water is a huge issue. So I know of an organization that needed a water reporter. So they went to a funder who funds water issues in Colorado and, you know, made the very successful argument that if water is important to your nonprofit, we need a reporter to cover it. And that nonprofit funded that reporter at the news organization, and the news organization was not a nonprofit. So there are ways for us to do this if the news organizations have a fiscal sponsor. And the other thing I think that you can do as a news organization to engender trust in your community is consider getting verified. There's nonprofits like the Journalism Trust Initiative that will go in and audit a news organization for truth and accuracy and give that news organization the equivalent of what used to hold the weight of a blue check mark on what was formerly Twitter, and then go through that audit every year or so. And that helps the community to understand that, yes, this news organization is not one of disinformation that's free, but it's one of fair and accurate reporting that also is free, because we've been able to well fund it either through memberships or through grants or donations or low interest loans. That's another thing that we're doing in Colorado, is low interest loans.
Thanks. I want to just say there's a great question that I think we need to come make sure we pay some attention to from the audience about, can local town governments, you know, governments that do things like support libraries, recreation, councils on aging, what role can they play in funding a local newspaper without compromising the independence? It's sort of one of the deep questions of our time. What role will public policy play in trying to save local news? It is a public good, but all of us who are journalists are deeply allergic to government funding, right? And I would just say, I want to say to a little partial quick answer to this excellent question would be, we have to be really careful, in short. And there are ways to think about public support for journalism. And I want to say, this is not new. Public radio, public television have been doing this for a long time, community-supported efforts, but they also get grants from what's called the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is federal money. And that was a movement created in the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson to say, we need to enlighten and inform audiences in ways that commercial television and radio are not getting it done. That's the impetus for creating the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which fuels places like public radio and public television and the great programming we see on those various production platforms and organizations that are right in our communities, local NPR or national NPR or local PBS and national PBS. So it's a big question, but it's one where we've had, as a country, we have some history in doing this. And it feels like another moment in time, like a great society moment, to really think about how we reimagine how there will be public support for public media. So I just want to make that serve as a little quick answer to the audience member who asked that excellent question. There's some other questions, and I'm going to circle right to them right after I come back to you, Tracy, and ask you about this important idea of what is underway in understanding just how badly we have squandered the trust that journalism once had. There's a lot of blame going around pointed toward the platforms have undercut trust. Okay, that's true. That is true. They are capable of disseminating misinformation, disinformation with incredible speed. Misinformation's been around a long time, but the speed with which it's delivered and the intensity with which it bombards an issue is unusual and different. But we lost trust for lots of reasons. One of them is we just weren't listening to people well. And you talked about needing to listen to the communities. Tell me a little bit about this idea of how do we have to work to change who's telling the story and how they tell the story if we're really going to win that trust back?
So one of the things that the newspaper industry specifically has struggled with is recruiting and hiring news staffs that reflect the communities that they're located in. And so that's one of the things that Pivot looks for. We want to make sure that the staff, the leadership is reflective of the community that news organization says it serves. And it looks like Paz La Voz producing news and information in the language that its community consumes it in. You know, English might be their second, third, fourth, fifth language, if at all. And so, you know, Paz La Voz was born out of this need to share with the immigrant community in Savannah, Georgia, how to keep themselves safe during a hurricane. Because when you look at the television screen, the meteorologists are speaking in English. Even that little crawl line at the bottom of the screen is in English. And so for folks who do not speak English, that was not helpful or useful. And so Paz La Voz started reporting hurricane coverage via Facebook Live. It was accessible because Facebook is free for Paz La Voz. It's also free for the folks that they're trying to reach. And they were reporting it in Spanish, a language that was accessible to the people that they were trying to reach. Now, that was easy for, you know, the dominant news outlet in Savannah to do, but they, quite frankly, never did it. They did wind up buying a Spanish language newspaper, but then it was a lot of crappy ads and very little to no content. And so that paper, Spanish language paper, wasn't reaching its audience either. But it was just, it's not rocket science, right? Yeah. Deliver the news in the language that's accessible to people. The other thing I think is from a funding standpoint, and I know philanthropy is a part of the news revenue mix. It's not the end all be all. It's not the only answer. We're going to have to get support from other places. And so, you know, I think trusting those publishers who are embedded in their communities, who are, you know, neighbors with the people they're trying to serve, it's important to trust them too. Trust them to know how to reach folks. April Ross, the first thing she did with some of the money that we invested was hire a sports director, because she understood in a way that I didn't, that the way to bring people together was through sports. Everybody is cheering for some of the same teams in the region, which, and this is sports country. This is the South. So everybody's cheering for some of the same teams. And so she brought used sports news to bring folks in. And then she used the revenue that was generated. She generated probably $55,000, if not more, in revenue just from that sports coverage. She reinvested that back into the news product.
Right.
Hire people who look like the community that she is serving.
Exactly. Well said. I know that would be music to the ears of our executive director, Kim Kleeman of Report for America, who happened to go to UNC. So she knows that just how important sports are. She really wants our Report
for
America.
This is bulldog country. We don't talk about those other folks.
Right. She wants Report for America Corps to really deepen its coverage of high school local sports, or, you know, really, really local sports, as a way to get the community to come together around the coverage. There's so many ways to do this. And you're right. We've got to have newsrooms that reflect the communities we cover. I just want to point out something that at Report for America, we're working hard on that. We have more than 50% of our core members identify as reporters of color. 2/3 are women. We have so much more work to do to stay on that, but it's a goal we have to all have. One question was directed specifically to you, Bobby, about the New Bedford Light. Can you speak to the deterioration of the quality of the Standard Times, the once proud newspaper in the community that now feels more like a ghost paper? Basically, just talk a little bit about that part of your business model to fill the void, we'd have to say, left by the Standard Times. You know, what role did that play in improving the news ecosystem in your community?
Well, that's absolutely the crux of our origin story. The demise of the Standard Times, the absence of any kind of strong independent news coverage in a city that is in desperate need of it, because of its demographics and issues that it faces, really came from citizens, neighbors who were talking to each other on the sidewalk outside their homes. You know, what's going on? Well, I don't know what's going on. I don't know where to find out what's going on. Nobody knows what's going on. And, you know, a couple of those folks who were having those conversations were former retired editors of the Standard Times. That's how it got started, that with those kinds of conversations, and then more people got involved, and then, oh, there was a group that met every week, and then it became a little bit more formal, and there was a steering committee, and somehow somebody wrote me in because I moved to this area to retire, and like a moth to the flame, you know, I just went right back in, because it's impossible to resist if you believe in the power of strong local journalism to make a difference in a community. You just can't look the other way. So I just turned 70. I'm hoping to re-retire at some point. But what we've been able to do over the last 2 years, that we've only been publishing for a little bit over 2 years, is really broaden our staff to the diversity issue, really, really important, our internships. And yeah, getting local kids from New Bedford High School and from the local community college and the local state university. We have the editors of those papers and others who are involved, who have recently gotten involved in our newsroom, learning how to do it, learning how to do the real thing.
There's a lot of efforts to try to really bring young people into this. We're going to have a kind of new literacy around what is good journalism. We're going to have to get a new generation involved. What are you seeing in your corner that is, you know, that is looking at this, like how to have apprenticeships or how to have a new way of bringing in a new generation of journalists?
I think young people commit acts of journalism all the time. And when you asked that question earlier about how we define journalism, we need to look to how they are already redefining it. That Instagram account that I talked about with the 900,000 something subscribers, those are all younger folks, right? And they know exactly how we're talking about trying to get them trained, and they need to be training us, right? About how do we reach this younger audience using the channels that they use. But I do, at Morehouse College, they just launched their first journalism program at Morehouse and just had one of their first graduates. But they teach a course called Social Justice Journalism. Younger people really, really care about the social issues plaguing our country right now. So let's teach them how to cover those issues in a really inclusive, impactful, and solutions through a solutions journalism lens. And that's exactly what they're doing at Morehouse. But that's the standout program for me right now. We're also needing to try to train and teach young people how to sell advertising, how to understand audience analytics. And some of that stuff is already happening as well.
The last question is really about what makes you hopeful right now in this moment that local journalism can play a role, if not fixing in our democracy, healing the divide in our democracy. Bobby, I'm going to start with you. What makes you hopeful right now?
Well, as I said, I'm really blown away at the impact that the little New Bedford light is having on the city that we inhabit. And seeing that from little things to huge things just renews my faith in, again, the power of journalism, of good journalism, having, you know, kind of ridden the high and then gone through the low and wondering like what it was all about. And just the way this community appreciates what we're doing.
Thank
the
you.
Love letters we get. Love letters? Woo, yeah. That's a first.
Two things. Collaboration. It is working here in Colorado. It's working locally, statewide, and now it's working regionally. So that's my main thing. The other thing to speak to the interns and pipeline, college is too late for interns. I helped start a program here in Colorado for 13 to 18 year olds. We go into the schools, we look for BIPOC kids. If they're interested in playing video games, I'll find a spot for them in journalism. If they want to drive a truck, I'll find a spot for them in journalism. If they like to write poetry, I'll find a spot for them. So back the pipeline down. We don't have to go to college still for this profession. We can have apprentice and journeyman systems, and we will train you up, and then we can change what management looks like. If we change what management looks like, we change how things get covered in our communities.
Well said. Tracy, give us some hope here. What are you seeing that makes you hopeful about how local journalism can be part of change?
I think these small, independent, hyper-local news organizations are having an outsized impact, and they are generating revenue along the way. So they are instructive to the industry writ large about how this can be done and about the value of relationships, you know, building relationships with the folks that we want to impact with our civic news and information. And it's incredible to see these organizations grow and prosper in times when, as you mentioned earlier, we are in crisis, but these are oases in the desert.
Thank you, Tracy. You guys are so exceptional. All three of you, thank you for being on this panel.
Excellent. I'm sure you fired up some of the audience too, hopefully. Cambridge Forum is made possible through the generosity of Herbert and Dorothy Vetter, the Lowell Institute, Mass Cultural Council, Cambridge Community Foundation, and of course, all of you. So if you want to donate or sign up to our list, please visit the website, cambridgeforum.org. Thank you all for joining us, and I hope to see you all soon.